Hey everyone, welcome to the Worn Shoes Podcast. My name is Zachary, and I talk with people that have grown up around the world and learn about the extraordinary in their everyday lives. Today I'm talking with Kevin, who's a professional badminton player who grew up in Paraguay, Venezuela, the Philippines, and yeah, is now a badminton coach and plays professionally. And yeah, we talk about the role of sports and community and how it can influence families and individuals. Hope you guys enjoy.
Sweet. Hey, Kevin. Thanks for being on the Worn Shoes podcast. Yeah, how are you doing today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
Yeah, awesome. To start off, would you mind telling me some of the places that you considered to be home, and or maybe some of the places that you grew up in?
Yeah, so I grew up all over the world, Venezuela, Panama, Paraguay, US and Canada briefly, and for the longest time, the Philippines. So Philippines is definitely the place that I feel most at home, and second would probably be Venezuela.
Yeah. Yeah, you listed a lot of places. So Panama, Venezuela, Philippines, US and Canada. Did I miss anything?
And Paraguay.
And Paraguay. Okay. Yeah. What are the ages that you were in, and kind of each of the, you mentioned Philippines and Venezuela being the big ones. So maybe, yeah. What?
Yeah. So Venezuela, I actually left by the time I was 5.
Okay.
But all of my family lives there. So my great grandparents, my grandparents, my extended family, we all have roots there, so to speak. And then I was in Paraguay till I was 6 and a half. Somewhere in there, we lived in Panama for a year. And then we were in the U.S. For a little while, and then the Philippines. I'm stuttering because we moved a lot. So even though, like, okay, we were in one country, we moved back and forth quite a bit. So by the time I graduated high school, I'd lived in 36 houses in seven different countries. So I'd kind of, there's a timeline is complicated, but probably I was in the Philippines for over 8 years. That was the longest. In Venezuela for probably 4 or 5-ish. Combined.
Yeah, that's a lot of houses to grow up in. I relate to some of that, just kind of traveling around a lot, especially when I was younger, where I'll be like, oh yeah, I lived here from these ages in this house, and I'll recount that to my family or my parents, and they'll be like, no, we were actually over here. And I'm like, okay, I just can't keep track of it anymore.
Yeah, so when I graduated high school, my mom and I sat down and made a spreadsheet to try to figure out because you know, as a teenager, people are always asking, oh, where are you from, like, and I was okay, like, maybe if I make a spreadsheet and I can like recount where I was when, like, that will help me like have an idea about where I'm from. And it didn't help at all, but it was very interesting.
Yeah just imagine, have that spreadsheet and you just, where are you from, you're like, all right, here's all the places. Just take a look at this.
It was a very, we color coded everything. It was a very like complicated looking sheet, but it was interesting to make.
So you, Venezuela, and then did you come to the States after that, or?
Yeah, briefly. To Arizona.
Okay, and what? Yeah, I mean, you mentioned you were 5 years old when you. When you left Venezuela, or you've been there for 5 years? Okay.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. What was that? Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just gonna ask, like, how much do you remember of that transition? And you mentioned Venezuela being one of the important places because a lot of your family is still there, and but then leaving when you were at such a young age. What was kind of going on there, and how'd you experience that?
Yeah. So, like, as a kid, moving around. I didn't really like, I guess, contemplate it too much, but Venezuela, even though I have, I would say, limited memory of Venezuela. So I have like a couple of years max that I kind of remember.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that through, I know through home video that I spoke Spanish as a kid, and all of that stuff. And
yeah,
so I have a lot of ties to Venezuela, and I remember like leaving it feeling weird because my uncles and aunts, like my family was all there. But then as a kid moving to North America, so we actually moved very briefly to Canada. My brother was born in Canada. And then to Arizona. It was just sort of exciting. Like oh, it's a new place and new friends, new everything. And so there we kind of had we jumped around quite a bit from the time I was like 4 until I was, must have been 7. That's where like Panama and Paraguay came in.
Okay.
So at that time it was very much just like an adventure. And my parents always framed it that way. They always framed everything like, not like, oh, we know it's going to be hard for you. It was like, hey, there's a new adventure. Like we get to go to this country or, like you remember hearing this story about Panama, like you remember like reading about the Panama Canal, like, hey, we're moving there. Or like before you moved to Paraguay, like heard stories about like the Paraguayan Civil War and like some history and like, so I always viewed it and experienced it more as an adventure than anything else, I guess.
Okay. Yeah. And so, hopping around in Paraguay and Panama. And how long were you in each of those countries kind of respectively?
So Panama, we were there for just over a year. I think 13, 14 months, somewhere in there. And Paraguay, we were there for about 15 months.
Yeah. Yeah, and you talked about that being framed as an adventure by your parents, and you said you did kind of experience that as just as a young kid, as kind of an adventure and fun for the most part, or
as a kid, definitely. As I got older, then stuff started hitting harder because you start contemplating like, oh, I'm never gonna see these friends again. I'm never gonna do this thing that I enjoyed, which. Some of it didn't end up being true. Like, I remember like thinking, oh, I'll never eat mangoes again. And then we went to the Philippines and there was much better mangoes in the Philippines. So,
And so as a kid, you didn't really have like, I don't know, the capacity or the framework to kind of process some of that stuff. But as an adult, you've kind of gone back and looked back at that time.
Yeah, definitely. As I got older, doing a lot more processing. I think, even though as a kid you don't process, it builds up. So even as a teenager or young teenager, just trying to process some of the stuff like, people would, whenever you have friends, people are always trying to relate to each other and find things that they have in common and stuff like that. I definitely did a lot more processing where it's like, okay, so they're talking about this. What do I have that's in common with that? And always like sifting through the different countries and trying to like snag something that was similar. And then as you do that, you are process. Oh, I've lived more places than my friends, that sort of thing.
We'll talk more about the processing as an adult and going back and looking that. A little bit later, but so after all those places and can I ask all the transitions with your parents and your family, what was the purpose behind that or all that moving around or what did your family do?
so my dad was a missionary pilot with an organization that's now called Ethnos 360 Aviation, but back then was called NTMA, New Tribes Mission Aviation. So just providing air support for missionaries, for doing medevac flying, that sort of thing. Kind of because of that, we moved a lot. And my dad was quite good at what he did. So whenever there was fields where maybe airstrips needed, like whatever, the field needed help with the aviation program, my dad would go in and kind of sort it all out and train new people.
Okay.
So that was sort of why I moved a lot.
Gotcha. Yeah. And so you guys moved to the Philippines when you were how old?
I would have been 9. You know, I had my 10th birthday there. Yeah, would have been 9.
Yeah. And do you remember that transition a little more? Yeah, how was that? Because I feel like as a 9-year-old, you have a little more understanding of what's going on.
Yeah, so that transition happened slowly, which is probably a blessing. First off, Martin and Gracia Burnham were kidnapped. They were a missionary family there, and they got kidnapped and were held hostage for a year. And through that process, there wasn't any aviation service happening. So we were asked to go in, go to the Philippines for, I think, 7 weeks or 8 weeks, something like that. So we went. We were at the time living in Arizona. Mm-hmm. And so we went to the Philippines, got to kind of experience it. I loved it. We lived in a little small bamboo house right on grass airstrip next to the hangar.
Yeah.
So I worked with my dad every day, kind of did my school when it worked, was like kind of homeschooled during that time. And I really loved it. And then we went back to Arizona and I kind of kept having like, that was so cool. That was so cool. And then we were asked to go back full time. And I think I went into that transition really, really excited because I just had a great adventure there. Really loved.
Yeah.
We loved being there. And it wasn't until we were there probably a year that it really hit me how hard it was to move. And I remember this was way back before texting and WhatsApp and all that stuff. I remember my mom giving me a chance to call one of my friends back in Arizona. And I remember calling him, and with time change and stuff, I had gotten up really early. And it took us like 2 minutes before we ran out of stuff to talk about because we all of a sudden didn't have anything in common. I'd moved. His family had moved on. And I remember just thinking like, wow, it hasn't been that long. And like, that friendship is already kind of, I shouldn't say like fallen away, but it definitely dissipated. Like it wasn't really there anymore. And that was hard. It was a hard realization as a kid.
Yeah, because you would have been 10 at that time?
Yeah, 10, ish, probably almost 11. Yeah.
Yeah, just kind of, calling your friend. Yeah. Yeah, that's hard. And yeah, just kind of, I mean, you talked about, you know, being a 9-year-old and thinking about going there and being like, oh yeah, that was cool when I was there. And so excited to go back, you know, and even, you know, maybe, you know, from when you had moved around in Paraguay and Panama and all that being framed as an adventure. And you're like, oh, sweet, this is an adventure. And then going there and talking about that, realization when you call your friend and realize, oh, I have nothing in common or not nothing in common, but, you know, just kind of running out of things because things had changed so much. What were some of the big things that changed for you, other than just like location and time zone? I mean, that's a massive change in and of itself. But I mean, what was it like going to the Philippines and what were some of the changes you experienced as a kid?
So a lot of it, like especially at that age, it was the stuff that we were into. So when we lived in Arizona, I played football. My friend had a hobby farm. They had chickens and cows and stuff. And like after school, we'd play capture the flag, and it was like group oriented. We had quite a big friend group, and did a lot of sports, did a lot of like building and hunting, and we like every day, like kind of after football and stuff, we'd go wander the desert and shoot jackrabbits and cook them over a fire and kind of live that sort of like adventurous kid life. And then when I was in the Philippines, like even though we lived kind of rurally, Philippines is a very overpopulated country. So there wasn't kind of room to do that stuff. There was no football. There were no other missionary kids. So I did a lot of stuff on myself. And the things that I did was a lot more revolving around my family. So working with my dad at the hangar, like playing Legos with my brother, building a treehouse, stuff that was like,
yeah,
I guess not revolving around my friend group and sports and that sort of thing. So I think a lot of it was just because of the location changed, the things I thought were fun or that I enjoyed changed. And my friends didn't.
Yeah.
They still played football and still cared about band and these things that I just didn't anymore.
Yeah. 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 And so, yeah, just kind of moving from a really group-oriented group activity to kind of it's me and my family. And I mean, you mentioned there are no other missionary kids growing up. And just kind of doing stuff with your family and your brother. And I relate to that too, because for a large portion of me growing up, it was like, it was just our family. You know, we're the only ones there, and we kind of had to make do with, you know, ourselves and us. And, yeah, you talked about, yeah, working on the hangar with your dad. What did your, were you doing homeschool at that time?
Or were Yeah. So I was homeschooled. And I was actually homeschooled, I would say, a pretty large portion of my growing up, because mm-hmm. we moved so much. You're always in the middle of a school semester or a quarter or whatever it was, wherever right. we were. So a lot of it ended up being homeschooled, or doing, school online.
Yeah,
that was later when that became a thing.
So doing kind of mostly homeschool growing up with your family. I wanted to backtrack to something that you mentioned earlier. You mentioned that there was a couple that had gotten kidnapped, and that's why you guys went over initially. Were they part of the aviation program, and that's why you guys went over to kind of
So Martin Burnham was the pilot in the Philippines, and he ran the flight program there. So when they got kidnapped, then that got closed down, I guess.
Yeah, and as a kid, I mean, you mentioned just being there and being in the bamboo hut by the hangar. Was there any sense of fear of like, okay, we're here because this other couple got kidnapped? So is there any, I don't know, I could just imagine that maybe, but as a kid, did you have any comprehension of that or feelings?
But so I think growing up, everywhere we went, we were around people that had been kidnapped or were dealing with that. So one of the people that I really looked up to as a kid was a guy named Paul Dye. He's written a book, I think it's called God at the Controls. But he had been kidnapped in Venezuela/Colombia, I believe. And he often told stories about his escape. And then in Panama, there had been some families kidnapped. And so dealing with that fallout. So it wasn't a new thing. In Venezuela, we live right on the Colombia border. There was a lot of kidnappings and different stuff happening. So it was, I would say it was quite common to me as a kid. And so I viewed it more like I felt like we got to be part of the action rather than just sitting on the sidelines in Arizona. I felt like, oh, we're really just like not really involved in all the like stuff, cool stuff that's happening.
So
I did comprehend it. I would say it wasn't a fear thing. It was more of a like, oh, we get to be part of the action, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah. Just kind of involved. Can I ask if your dad, was your dad ever kidnapped? I mean, I'm just asking because I mean, you make it seem like, yeah, just this kind of regular occurrence.
Well, I probably shouldn't make it sound too regular for anyone who wants to be a missionary, but no.
Scare him off?
No, my dad was never kidnapped. And I say that it made me feel part of the action. We weren't part of the action in that sense. I definitely had some closer calls in high school when I would go off by myself a lot more, but no, there's a lot of contingency stuff that we did to make sure that we stayed safe. And honestly, like this couple, Martin and Gracia, they did the same things. They were at the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah.
But no, my family doesn't have like personal experience with that. No, nobody in my family got kidnapped or nothing crazy.
Yeah. No, I mean, just when you're talking about it, it's just kind of wild to me that, as a kid, kidnapping was just kind of like, it's just kind of part of the action, almost normalized to an extent.
I think missions has changed a lot. But when I was young, there was definitely sort of a side of it that was very, I don't know, macho is the right word, but but people went to difficult places, and a lot of the kids, at least, probably not the parents, I would guess that they would be a little more laid back, but the kid definitely liked to brag about it. Oh yeah, my parents were involved in this. Oh, my parents did. which probably over-normalized it as a kid. And I should emphasize that, like, these are memories that I have as a kid. I doubt that the adults during that time were like, oh yeah, kidnapping's normal. But that was the like more of the feeling I had as a kid.
Close to the action, being involved, and you talked about, you know, maybe some close calls you had during high school, and I assume that through high school you're doing some version of online homeschool thing. But tell me a little bit about getting later into your teenage years in the Philippines and what some of that looked like.
Yeah, so while we were in the Philippines, we lived on three different islands, Palau and Mindanao and Luzon. And I would say that my heart will always be in Palau, and that was where we first moved. It's where I would say to this day most of my friends are. But I actually left there quite young. We were there 3.5 years, which until adulthood, that was the longest I'd ever lived anywhere, really, in one place.
Yeah.
And even there, we moved towns partway through, moved houses. But a lot of, I'd say a lot of my growing up in the Philippines, my friend groups revolved around sports. So when we first moved to the Philippines, we lived in a little tiny town. And much more rurally. And then we moved to kind of the main city on the island, Puerto Princesa. And that's where I got into badminton. And badminton's where I made all my friends. And I'd hang out at the badminton court hours and hours and hours every day. That was sort of my community, all my friend group, everything that I guess, had in some shape or form was through badminton. And I had tried other sports. I had played soccer, and I remember the first time I played soccer, I got the ball, and I was the only white kid on the team, and I got the ball, and everybody stopped. Like, everybody on the field who was running just stopped. And so, like, I kicked the ball to somebody, and then I just walked off the field. I was like, this isn't fun. And probably in retrospect, like, not a good response.
Yeah.
Not a good way to build community or but that was sort of my, like, okay, well, I don't fit here. Playing badminton, it's more individual sport. I was able to make like one-on-one friends. Like, hey, go ask some guy to play singles against you. And you have like a one-on-one connection. So everywhere we went in the Philippines, the first thing I did was like ask around about a badminton court. And then I'd go hang out there. Still really involved with my family, still worked with my dad, all that stuff. But like outside of my family, my community was always revolving around badminton.
I'll be honest, I don't know much about badminton, so I'm excited to talk about that. And I mean, I'll out you a little bit, but when you joined this call, I laughed because where you put your name, you know, you put badminton as life, and that kind of that cracked you up.
That's actually funny. So I signed in with Google. I didn't realize that that was the name. So I changed my Google name because as I started playing, I guess professionally, I would get searched all the time, and having my name as my Google thing meant that I was getting like spammed. People were like messaging me, and people are always betting on sports, and so when they lose money, they like to lash out at people. And so like I had the Google Hangout or Google Chats, whatever, all these things, I was getting spammed all the time. So I changed my name to Badminton Is Life, so people can look up look up me by name and and harass me. They still can on social media, but kept the Google cleaner.
Okay, well now I feel bad because that's a kind of a sad backstory to the name.
I think it's funny. So.
Okay, good. As long as you think it's funny. Oh, it is funny. Badman just being this community. That's interesting. That kind of soccer. That kind of you is the only white guy just kind of singled out and not really, you know, and involved there, and then but badminton being able to do singles with someone and just kind of make that one-on-one connection, it just kind of made me curious. Do you lean more extroverted or introverted, just kind of, or do you
I'm definitely introverted.
You refuse to be labeled. Okay, gotcha.
As a TCK, I definitely try to refuse to be labeled. I'm definitely introverted. I think I've learned to be to be extroverted or to act extroverted. Anytime you are in the public eye or are trying to do something like coaching or sports or anything, you have to act a certain amount extroverted. And the same is true, like with moving so much and having to make new friends. Like I can act extroverted, but I gain my energy and I like being alone. So in that way, I'm very introverted.
And I was just wondering because, it does seem like badminton had that kind of one-on-one, you know, you mentioned it being a single player sport, you know, and so just kind of, that was interesting. But maybe we could, you know, go into more talking about badminton and kind of, growing up playing that and then how that has kind of affected what you do today and how you live your life and why badminton is your life and all that.
So it's a long story. So badminton definitely had a huge impact on me as a kid. And as much as badminton had an impact on me, I'd say the people I interacted with had a big impact on me. And one of the very first coaches I had was just an insanely kind person. And he did a lot for me, helping me get to practice, come pick me up on a scooter and drive me to practice, or just did a lot of stuff. He taught me how to string rackets. He'd bring me to his house and we'd watch stupid soap operas and string rackets. And he was just a very, very kind person, but very invested. And so he really helped me grow up, and he would very kindly kind of help guide me and direct me. And I remember, like, as a kid, I always wanted to be a little bit of a rebel, or I don't know, rebel's the right word, but did things my own way. And I always kept all my money in this little Ziploc bag. And because I was like, I don't want to spend money on a wallet. Like, there's a more practical way. And I remember him kind of kindly telling me, like, you know, Kevin, like, you're growing up, like, it's time that you get a wallet. He's like, it's respectful to everyone around you if you can kind of be like kept up a little bit better and not fishing through a plastic bag for your money every time you buy something. Like, he's like, it's not really about you, it's about other people, which I think also reflects the culture there. But he really helped me in those ways. And then, like, I mean you're seeing me on video, my hair is a mess. That part hasn't changed. I remember as a kid him being like, hey Kevin, like, time to get a haircut there, bud. And like, you need to show a little respect to the people around you. And so because of that, I really enjoyed sports and viewed sports as like a real way to connect with people, but also to, I guess, learn things and grow up and learn life lessons. And that really had, that had a big impact on me as a kid. And some, like some lessons you learn, I guess the hard way. I remember losing a final and throwing my racket and having a long talk with my dad and then with my coach afterwards, being like, hey, is that how you want to behave? Is that how, is that respectful to other people? Is that respectful to yourself or your competition? And so sports became a really, I guess, integral part of my life and part of learning how to treat people, learning how to treat myself. So because of that, it became a lot more than just sports. It literally, badminton became life. And I was really good at it. Not to sound arrogant, but it was something that I was good at. And every kid, like as you grow up, you kind of gravitate towards things that you're good at. And because I was good at it, I kind of stuck around. And that became, it became kind of like a constant in my life. We kept moving, kept going to different islands. We'd go back to North America. We'd come back to the Philippines. And it was, I would just go find a badminton club. And you always have something in common with people. You always have a connection point with people. So it became a really easy way to meet people. And it wasn't awkward because I was good at it. So I didn't have to like be shy and nervous and anxious and all these things. I could kind of just, hey, like, let's go play. And that was a big help with all the moving and everything I did.
That last part you said kind of struck me of like, you know, you being good and not having to hide that, you know, or and just kind of being able to, be your true and authentic self, where maybe perhaps in other areas of your life feel like you couldn't. But I mean, that makes a lot of sense. Just kind of, I mean, the way, and I'd love if you talked more about, the way that you view sports, because for you personally, you know, that's where you found community. It's just going and hanging out at the badminton club, and then this mentor coach that you had just really bringing you in. And I mean, that's awesome. And I would just love if you talked more about just kind of this perspective you have of sports and if it can do for people what it kind of did for you. And
So I think sports can be a real mirror to life. There can be lots of ups and downs and like emotional highs, and you can do a lot of things where the risk feels really high because it's very emotional, but there actually is no risk. And I say that a little bit, there can be risk. You can lose scholarships. You can like that sort of thing, but there's not life and death risks. You're not sacrificing your family, you're not like there's not major risks. So it can be, I don't know, the sandbox to learn in. Like, you can learn how to do a lot of things, and a lot of the things that I learned in life were mirrored in my badminton. So if I was like struggling with maybe self-confidence or anxiousness or whatever, it really got mirrored but also magnified on the badminton court, because if you're not confident, if you're worried, you don't play well. If I was really like excited and happy and really felt that people were behind me, I could play really well. I practiced harder. I did better at tournaments. So badminton became kind of like this mirror to life and a place to experiment and learn that didn't have insane consequences. And I think that's it also became like a really, I guess I want to say, like a safe place to interact with people and to learn these lessons. And I think because I experienced that way, that's the way that I view it. I play badminton professionally, but I also coach a lot, and I have coached since I was quite young. And that kind of philosophy of like saying, hey, life is, or like sports is a is a mirror to life in a way to learn about a lot of these things, really impacted the way that I coach. So I always view an experience on the court as a way to like obviously grow in the sport. You can learn something to improve in the sport, but also in life. And I remember one of the early times I started coaching, one of the kids that I was coaching lost a pretty important match. I think it was a final or a semifinal. I don't remember. And the next day of practice, he was so grumpy and he was upset and just didn't want to try. He was not happy. So I told him, you know what? I want to, like, this is not helpful. You're going to go run laps. And you're going to like think about the match, think about yourself. And when you're ready to change like your perspective on what happened, because I think he really felt like the guy I played against had cheated and this and that. Like there's lots of excuses and things like that. And I was like, you know what? That's not helpful. Like you're going to go run laps. Like it's not a punishment, but it's going to give you time to yourself. You're going to think about it. And when you're ready to change your perspective and your attitude, you're going to come back.
Yeah,
and this kid ran for like an hour and a half. Like he was really stubborn.
Wow. Yeah.
And where we were practicing at the time, there was like an indoor running track that went around the courts. So he just kept running and running. And quite a while later, he came to me and he's like, you know, Kevin, like you were one of the first people that like really told me that I could control my own perspective and my own attitude and my own like feelings towards something.
Wow.
And that was sort of like, I guess a little bit eye-opening for me, like, hey, like I have a lot of say into kids' lives, which I have to treat very carefully, but also like,
yeah,
oh, that's really neat to have an opportunity to help give them tools, to grow in life and to learn lessons that I'm learning or have learned. So that had a big impact on the way I coach, and that's changed over the years in some ways. Like I still definitely view sports that way. But I also think that instead of viewing it just as like, oh, just me as the coach has say into a kid's life, also recognizing where other people do as well, specifically parents or family members, they probably have the most impact on a kid. And so now I would view sports as more an opportunity for like for the family to interact, because I was really lucky growing up because I got to work with my parents. Got to be at the hangar with my dad, got to watch my mom fly follow and work, and I got to be super involved. So I had a lot of interaction with my parents. I had a lot of their input into my life.
Yeah.
And a lot of the kids that I coach don't have that because their parents work a job where they can't be around. The kids go to school. So there's not a lot of places where their lives intersect. But sports can be one of them. So I definitely see that. And the idea remains the same. Sports is a mirror and a amplifier to life. But now viewing it more like less as like, oh, just me as the coach or just a coach has say into a kid's life or impact. Like, oh, there's other people as well and letting sports facilitate that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's awesome. And yeah, I really like that perspective. And I would, yeah, I mean, you talk about this, especially in North America, you know, just kind of sports being an opportunity for parents and kids for their lives to intersect. Whereas, and, you know, in many, otherwise it might just be, you know, at home or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe even not then. But, yeah, I don't know. Do you have any stories? I mean, with you as a coach, and I mean, I really loved hearing how your coaching philosophy has just kind of changed. My sister just got engaged, and her fiance is a soccer coach. Like he coaches college aged kids, you know, which I think is probably a very different, you know, different way of coaching. But I mean, I love hearing about just his philosophy, and it seems like coaches just, yeah, it's really cool to hear how you think deeply about the impact that you have on these kids, and then, yeah, how to bring their families together. I don't know. I'm just thinking how cool that is, and just getting to hear that. And I would maybe you could talk more about, yeah, this idea of sports being a place to bring together families, and how maybe you've seen that work, or how you hope that works. And yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, before I get to that, I want to just highlight one comment. You said, like coaching college age kids can be really different.
Yeah.
And so I coach kids all the way from the time they're like 5 until they're like professionals in their 20s.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I'd say that some of the, like, how you do things changes, of course. But I think the mentality actually stays very similar. Something my dad told me was that kids will follow whoever believes in them. And that remains true to adults too. Like, as an adult, like, if someone believes in me, like, they really think, like, they have my back, they believe in what I'm doing. Those are the kind of people I'm going to gravitate towards. So I think while the how changes, I think the main philosophy doesn't necessarily change that much. Anyway, okay. On to families and sports. So So just recently, the club I'm part of ran a tournament. And instead of doing everything by age group and kind of isolating, like making an adult tournament and a kid tournament, and we combined it, and we made a new event, which is obviously won't be official and won't ever have ranking points or gauge the Olympics, but we started this event called Family Doubles. So it was a parent with a kid, and then we kind of expanded it to just an adult with a kid, because a lot of families have lots of kids and only two parents. So that it became like an adult. So an aunt or uncle, or we had a few adults volunteer just to be with any kids that needed a partner. And right away, I saw like huge excitement with the kids. Like, there's these adults that they obviously look up to, but don't see very much. Now, hey, they get to be on the same court, and they're like talking. And the age range was pretty wide. Like, I think the youngest kid was like 5 years old, and the oldest was like 14. But just seeing like the interaction, and then one specific thing happened that I thought was kind of neat was this kid and his dad won a match, and this kid just started taunting the other kid, and we beat you, you know, like,
oh, wow.
like kids do. And the dad just like very gently like took him to the corner and just like, hey, we need to talk about this. Like, that's not a good way of like treating somebody else. And they were there like quite a while just talking, and the dad kind of be like, hey, why would you want to do that? And then kind of talking about the consequences and about other people. And it was really neat to me. I'm like, hey, that, like, we created an atmosphere and a place, and gave opportunity for this conversation to happen, because it's something we all need. Like, as kids, we all need to learn, like, how do you treat other people? How do you deal with winning and losing? And we created a really neat opportunity for like this kid's dad to talk to him. And it didn't have to be a coach, didn't have to be like, it could be this kid's dad, which I thought was really, really neat. So that's sort of how I see sports.
Oh, like, awesome.
It gives these opportunities for a parent to speak truth into a kid's life.
That's really cool, and I love that you came up with this parents or you know, adults playing with these kids, and that brings up a memory for me. I was back in Azerbaijan this December, for the first time in 5 years. And growing up, I played soccer. With like the local missionary kids school, and we played a bunch of, you know, big international schools. And it was always pretty competitive. And, you know, I mean, I had a good time with my friends and stuff, and it was fun. But every Saturday morning throughout the year, the Korean community, the mm-hmm. Korean men would get together, and they would rent like a gym or a field, and they would go out and play soccer. But they always brought their kids, and then eventually, through some of my friends, that I went to school with, you know, they were going to Saturday morning soccer, and I was like, oh, I love to play soccer, so I got invited to that. And so I ended up going, you know, and it was a bunch of, you know, middle-aged to older, you know, Korean men playing with their kids and with me. And then eventually, you know, my sister, she really likes soccer. She's like, oh, can I come to Korean soccer? And I was like, maybe. So I asked, and they're like, yeah. So eventually my sister started coming. And so eventually just all, like, it was just this, it was awesome. And when we went back this December, they had like a get together, you know, tournament. One of my friends, Young Yan, who's doing his time in the Korean military, he was back. And so it was him, his younger brother, his sister, me, my sisters, you know, my to be brother-in-law. And it was just all this just range of like old, you know, older men, and then just, you know, kids, you know, and we were all playing, you know, and there's, you know, Young Yan, he plays college soccer, you know, and he's at a very, you know, high level, and there's just a massive range, but everyone played together. And I mean, that memory just kind of hit me when you talked about that, but just like that Saturday morning soccer, I looked forward to that every week. And it was, it was a blast, because it was like, you know, there's these younger kids that are playing soccer where they're just, you know, running through and bowling through everyone. And then these old experienced, you know, Korean men that, you know, can't necessarily move very fast, but, you know, they've got great skill. And and so, yeah, that just kind of reminded me of that, just kind of, and how much of a positive experience that was for me, being able to play with people that weren't necessarily family, but just kind of older, this generational gap, I guess.
That's super cool. I think that's, to me, that's what sports can do. It can bridge the gap between generations, between cultures, between people. It's really a catch-all for bringing people together. It's a bridge for everyone, which I think is like super neat. And as a TCK, like being able to like go cross-culturally, or in a, like go in a country where I don't speak the language and get on court and you can still interact, and like a good shot is still a good shot no matter where you are. Like,
yeah,
it's right away a way to bring people together, which is really, really neat.
Yeah. That's awesome. So badminton, you know, you're coaching now, but are you still playing? And add on to that question is, you kind of talk about it for a way to bring people together, and you kind of talked about that a little bit when you were in high school and younger, but like now as an adult and when within your coaching career and maybe playing career, how has that kind of worked out for you personally?
So, I'm still competing right now. I have a knee injury, so I'm not traveling. But I am / was competing on the international circuit, on the world circuit, and I would say that my best friends are people that I see on the circuit that travel with, room with, from different countries. Yeah. Whether they're from Jamaica or China or wherever, at these tournaments we all come together and we share hotel rooms, and none of us are the top few in the world, so we're all on a budget, and so renting an Airbnb together or whatever, you get you live really closely with each other, but then you're also like with each other day in, day out. You're traveling together, you're winning and losing matches and practicing and coaching each other. And so in that way, sports has like really been my community, and it's been a very like international, cross-cultural, like wide open community for me, which has been really neat. I love traveling. I get tired of it sometimes. I think from April to December of last year, I wasn't anywhere more than 6 days, which is the duration of a tournament.
Wow.
So that was like, goodness. It can definitely be tiring, but yeah, having that community and having those people that you essentially live with, for all that time, that's how, I guess, badminton really, I guess, brought people together, like, now as an adult, yeah, like playing career. In my coaching career, I think it's quite similar, because see if I can need more coffee.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you get kids from all different backgrounds coming together and playing badminton, and you'll get like new immigrant kids from Hong Kong who come and they've been playing their whole life, and they're 10 years old and they're meeting the teenagers, and and because it's so level based instead of age based, at least in my training and coaching that I do, you'll get like these young kids that just moved to Canada. Maybe they're like self-conscious and nervous, but they get on the badminton court and they can do this. So they light up, they make friends, they are playing. You get kids that are like grew up here their whole life, but in a pretty small community. Now they're listening to different languages and meeting new people that are outside of their little circles. So I think in that way, it's still, I guess, bridging that gap for people.
Yeah, I wanted to ask a question and maybe push you a little, but you talked about for age as opposed to level range, and I want to ask, like, it can be a great place to connect, but for kids that maybe don't have as much natural talent or aren't able to achieve a certain level, and do you feel like level stuff, can sports also be a place to exclude and maybe isolate people that aren't able to perform at a certain level, or yeah, I don't know. Do you just have anything to say about that? Because I'm curious, and for me personally, we talked a little bit about it before the call, but I mean, basketball was definitely a place where I, as great as soccer was, basketball was just as isolating. And so I don't know. Yeah. Just, do you have any thoughts or anything about that?
Yeah. So as soon as you started the question, I just got like a mental picture of, the early Spider-Man. Okay. With great power comes great responsibility. Because as inclusive and inviting as sports can be, it can be equally cliquish, and like it can go as wrong as it can go good. And I think it's like, as a coach, it's my responsibility to make sure that doesn't happen. And not to make sure it doesn't happen in terms of like making rules or regulations but in terms of like leading and teaching kids how to treat each other well. And when you're talking about like level or people without natural talent, I think the neat thing about sports or anything is that, like I mentioned earlier, kids follow whoever believes in them. And sports is a place to show that you believe in somebody and that you appreciate progress more than results. And I say that as someone who plays professionally, where results really matter. Like my livelihood depends on me winning matches. But at the end of the day, it's about the progress that you've made. So a kid without natural talent will make the same kind of progress as someone with natural talent. It will just look different. So instead of like maybe winning a tournament, they made progress from not being able to hit certain shots to being able to hit them, or whatever it may be. There will be progress. There is progress. And that's the exciting part. It's helping kids grow or reach a potential that they have. And a lot of times that is on the badminton court. Sometimes it's not on the badminton court. I think one of the kids I coached with a lot of ADHD and autism, and he was this little tiny kid, and he could not hit a shuttle for the life of him. And but you know, he came and spent an hour with me twice a week, and he was always like super excited. Often like would just ramble on. We hardly play badminton, and he didn't improve at badminton very much. But he really opened up as a person and gained a lot of like self-confidence to talk to me. And the last lesson I had with him before I moved, he came with like a Christmas cap on his head, like a little elf, like red cap. And he's like, oh, I wore this because, like seeing you is like Christmas. And so I think like he didn't like, it had nothing to do with the badminton for that kid. It had to do with finding someone that cared about him and being able to interact and talk about things. And it revolved around badminton. The practice was badminton, but it was just the kid finding, I guess, an adult or like someone older that cared about him and didn't care that he stumbled around words and was shy and awkward and those things. Mm-hmm. So to answer your question, as good as sports badminton, but sports in general can also be bad. And then I think that's where whoever's in authority.
Yeah.
And I say authority kind of like people who are either good or people like coaches, people that have some sort of say into the community. That's where the responsibility lies to make sure that it does go well. It doesn't mean it always does, but
but there's a responsibility there to try and I really like what you said just about like the progress versus results, and especially for kids, I think like you said, that like results are good, you know, and to a certain extent they're important, but focusing on the progress, and then even just through our conversation, the connection between badminton and you know, life outside of badminton, and just kind of the connection that they can have and how they can positively influence each other, just is really cool.
I very much agree. And I can think of one. I'm going to give another short story, but so learning to be confident on the badminton court, I was a very shy, introverted person, so not a confident person by nature. And so sports, like I slowly started to come out of my shell, become more confident. And I remember the very first job interview I did, my coach told me, like, you know how, like, before a match, you prepare, you visualize, you kind of go through these things so that you know how you're going to perform, you know how you're going to deal with these difficult situations that are going to come up. He's like, you're going to do the same thing in this job interview. You're going to prepare, you're going to visualize for it. And, like, you walk on court confidently to, like, show that you mean business. You're going to walk in this job interview, you're going to, like, show that you mean business, going to show that you know what you're doing. And you're going to be prepared. You will have like thought of all the questions. You're going to know how to deal with these things. And it was a very like distinct moment where it's like, these are skills that I learned in badminton that directly correlate to life.
Hey, quick interjection here. We ended up having some technical issues where some of our audio got lost and wasn't synced up. The last little bit of our conversation got lost And so this next bit is just kind of Kevin's closing statements that we were able to record afterwards. So just letting you guys know.
So growing up in a culture where the community kind of gives you your identity versus moving to a country where you get to choose your own identity. And then because of constantly moving, even though like you kind of walk into communities where everybody's sort of, I think given an identity, it's more complicated than that, but the community kind of helps develop each person's identity. But as a TCK, you're always stepping into a new community. And so because of that, you have a lot of say into who you want to be or who you think you should be. And that can be really, I think, really complicated. And as a kid, every time I moved, it was like I could decide all over again, like who do I want to be? Do I want to be the badass? Do I want to be the shy kid? Do I want to, like, and if I messed up the time before, like, okay, well, I'm going to try harder to make friends, because last time I was shy and awkward and it was no fun. But as I've grown older, then you like start asking these questions, how, like, where does my identity come from? To a lot of people, like, I'm very like badminton-y, very athletic, like that's sort of my, like who people think I am. Whereas like, I feel like in reality, I am those things, but sports is more just an outlet for, I guess, a different side of me. Like I really like philosophy. I really like reading and writing and doing these things. And sports is a way that those things play out more than that. My identity is in badminton. Like I could quit badminton today and I'd still be the same person. I'd still think about problems the same way. I'd still contemplate people the same way. I'd still treat people the same way. By learning how to differentiate those things. So learning to view my identity separate from some of the things that I do. And badminton is a thing that I do. It's something I'm good at. It's something that I've been involved in. But it's not necessarily my life, despite my username being badminton is life. It doesn't, my identity doesn't need to be in badminton per se. Although to a lot of people, and oftentimes to myself, it is.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, I encourage you to like and share it with your friends and family. We do have an Instagram called the Worn Shoes Podcast, where I post updates and what you can look forward to and what type of episodes will be coming out. Also, I encourage you to go follow Kevin at Barkman Badminton, where he posts updates about badminton and some pretty cool videos time to time. So I just wanted to, thank you all for listening through and your continued support. The next episode will be released at the end of May, where I will be interviewing another podcaster. So look out for that. I'm really excited for that, and I will see you guys then.